Matilda Tule is kindly with us. We can call her a, well, a teapot collector, ex-leader, co-leader of the Greens, or a legal tutor. But mostly we call her Matilda. Thanks for joining us, sister. Tēnā koe.
Kia ora. Nice to talk with you again.
Good on you, Matilda. I suppose lots of people are asking you for political commentary. How do you feel about it?
I don't know. I'm kind of. It's kind of funny, actually. Lots of people saw the tally, which was cool, but also I don't really want to do tally too often. It's nice talking to you on the radio, but I think that might be just about it.
Okay. Well, we respect your skin in the game, and you know, you've got a lot of experience here. It feels as though we've been here before, and I'll be talking with Winston off the back of you as well. So not that you have to say kind things about him because he's coming up next, but and I'm sure that you won't necessarily be tempted to do so. But look, he has, and he looks to me like a whiskey-drinking, heavy-smoking card player at times. And so, you know, he's already said, hey, listen, if it's not happening for me, then I'll just bail on out. He didn't use those tones, I guess. But
so he should have, especially if he was on his horse. That would have been hilarious.
Ah, this is not my first rodeo. Matilda, I mean, is there some workable solution here, or do you think that personalities are too big and they'll just butt heads? What are you anticipating from this three-way negotiation?
I think Winston is going to run rings around the others. I mean, you know, he has so much more experience at this, and he knows how to deal with these guys. I mean, Luxon is too naive and inexperienced in the sense that he won't yet know what's important and how to deal with stuff. Seymour is too overexcited. And so I think Winston is going to have a lot of control over the next couple of years. I also think that, you know, New Zealand First proved itself to be pretty pragmatic during the term. They're really full on during the election campaign, but they do tend to kind of calm down a bit and just get their own stuff done during the term of Parliament. So I think we've probably got a couple of years of reasonable calm, and then once the election campaign starts to kick in 2026 or whatever it is, I think we'll start to see New Zealand First shake off the other two and start really campaigning on their own grounds, and that will be much more destabilising and difficult for Luxon and for National to handle that. So I think we're going to see New Zealand First kind of operate in stages. So the first couple of years are going to be pretty straightforward. They'll get their stuff done. They'll set their priorities and get their priorities underway. And then, come election year, it's going to be all on again.
Tēnā koe. So even though he said, hey, listen, if the deal's not right, I'm prepared to walk away, was that just another example of that cat and mouse, that political experience that you've just touched on? And by doing so, perhaps upping the stakes somewhat?
Yeah, totally. I mean, Winston knows. You were talking really about Winston and Shane in that, in many respects, because those two are the most experienced in the caucus, if I remember rightly. So they both have extensive negotiating experience in political realms and elsewhere. So I really do think that they are the ones in this three-way. They're the ones who know best how far to push things and the kind of messages to send. But they'll have their priorities, and they'll get their priorities through, I think, because they're quite pragmatic, actually, at the end as well. I mean, I really strongly advocated for people that were going to vote National to vote New Zealand First, mostly because he's stand in the wheels, right? He's going to make it much more difficult for both National and for ACT to get their program through. He's not always the best mate when it comes to Māori issues. I mean, you know, he can get really rough sometimes, but he's going to make it more difficult for them, which is kind of what we need at the moment. We need it to be more difficult for them to get their program through, and Winston is our best chance of that. So it's quite from a Māori perspective, it's fairly delicate in terms of, like, how New Zealand First may well protect many of our interests, not all of our interests, but many of our interests, in a right-wing government.
You teach law at Otago University. You've got a bloke who, by his own admission, has really he hasn't studied the treaties, just read a lot. This is David Seymour. He wants a referendum on the impact of using the principles of the Treaty on New Zealand legislation. I'm not quite sure how he intends to frame a referendum if he does get the opportunity to set one up. They're not cheap. And also, we know that Māori tends not to fare too well in these types of referenda. Indigenous peoples tend not to. What would you say, and also the bureaucratic challenges that exist in trying to put a referendum together? We've already had some strong rhetoric in this regard from opposition politicians. What can we anticipate here, do you think, Matilda?
I think, so Seymour was just kind of totally bought into a very anti-Māori racist rhetoric around the treaty. So he's advocating that the treaty is pretty much just a property deal that's got nothing to do with governance, with decision making. It's just a property matter, and that's how he wants the referendum to be framed. So it becomes about our right to sell or to hold onto our land, essentially, and nothing else. Because he's assuming that the state has the power and the authority to govern on our behalf, and we just have to put up with their decisions. So he's coming from a really propertarian point of view on the treaty, and spouting some horrible racist stuff around how, you know, the British came here to stop us from fighting with each other and all of that sort of rubbish. There's no historical basis for that rhetoric. It's all just, you know, it's all just made up. In terms of like the for Luxon, it's an issue. Like, what he will want to do is to set himself up as kind of a leader for the whole country, in the same way that John Key did when he first got in his first term. And so he won't want to be overseeing big mass protests, huge hikoi. He won't want to have, you know, iwi leaders forum and all of those other iwi organisations that have both money and therefore political power to be riding him over this. So he's going to want to be seen as someone who can bring the country together, all of that sort of stuff. But he won't want a referendum at all. And Winston is likely, again, to be a useful political backdrop for backstop to stop that from happening. But the rhetoric, I am worried about the rhetoric that's coming from the Māori MPs. You know, I heard Willie Jackson's whole, you know, going to war stuff. It's like, actually, no, this is not one of those occasions. This is an occasion for reason. It's not an occasion for war. That actually, there are a whole lot of Pākehā people in this country who don't want to see a kind of rerun of the foreshore and seabed. They understand kind of how awful and terrible that was for everybody. But they may still be uncertain about what treaty implications are for them. And so you just talk about it. There's a tactical, I think the Māori MPs are doing a tactical, making a tactical act where they're trying to force Luxon into thinking that it's going to be really terrible for him so that he's much less likely to do the referendum. But that kind of aggressive talk can really fire up people with racist tendencies. So it's not, it might be good tactically for Luxon, but it's going to be bad strategically for the rest of us. We have to deal with more emboldened racists who also want a war of some kind. They want a conflict that they can win. So I think for lots of us, we're going to have to try to temper that rhetoric that's coming from our own politicians in Parliament, Māori politicians, to make sure that there are conversations about what this referendum, the harm it will do, why it's wrong, and how much Māori engagement and decision-making actually benefits all of us, whether it's from the lands case, you know, keeping all of those state assets and state forests and stuff from the New Zealand Māori Council did in the 80s, to, you know, the use of tikanga Māori in the legal system to help support, you know, a broader set of rights and considerations in the law. There's lots and lots of things where Māori activity and governance and decision-making has been really beneficial for the country. That's what we need to be saying, not rubbish about going to war.
Tēnā koe. I'll leave the, you know, had the most powerful Māori caucus ever, but they hit the skids, didn't they, on October the 14th. We'll talk about that next time, but thank you, as always, Metiria, for your insightful commentary. Certainly wishing you well until we get another chance to call you all. Ngā mihi,
look forward to it.
Tēnā koe. Thanks, Metiria.